This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We begin today with two dueling studies from the University of Massachusetts that are fueling the national debate on defense cuts.
There's a lot at stake in this debate as federal lawmakers contend with how to slash nearly $1 trillion in defense spending over the next 10 years. That's what federal law requires in the wake of Congress's failure to agree on a deficit reduction package back in 2011.
It would mean huge job cuts across the nation, and especially here in Massachusetts, which ranks fifth in the nation in the number of Department of Defense contracts. That's the conclusion of one study from the UMass Donahue Center, which gets funds from the defense contractor Raytheon.
But another study from the Political Economy Research Institute at UMass lays out a case for why investments in education, clean energy, and health care would create many more jobs than defense. That study was paid for by Ben Cohen, founder of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream. In a moment, we're going to hear from the authors of both those studies and your calls.
But first, Brian Bender. He's national security reporter for the Boston Globe, and he wrote all about this in today's paper. It's his reporting that brought us this story. Brian Bender joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
Brian, if you could, remind us, first of all, of the political context in Washington that these two studies have become a part of. Lawmakers, the Pentagon, and the White House, they're all wrestling with the budget. So remind us of specifically the Budget Control Act and what that is.
The Budget Control Act, which was passed last year, mandated a whole series of cuts in federal spending to bring down the deficit. Some of the steps they mandated were quite draconian. As you mentioned, a total of $1 trillion in defense cuts over 10 years. And the reason why they went that far is because this commission that had been set up to try and come up with a better plan to rein in the government's finances failed to come to agreement. And right now we have about $500 billion of defense cuts already on the table. The Pentagon has already proposed those. The focus now is on this additional $500 billion, about $500 billion, that would go into effect in January automatically and would be across the board cuts. In other words, they would not be focused on particular programs. The Pentagon would be forced to just slash this across the board. And that's what both Democrats and Republicans are afraid of, that this would upend military strategy and cause a lot of problems. But many of those who want to roll back these will cite the economic impact of them as well, and how they would affect so many hundreds of thousands, really millions of jobs across the country, in their view.
Okay, so along come these two UMass studies then in that context. Let's start with the one from the Donahue Center. It was funded in part from Waltham defense giant Raytheon. But what's the major finding in the Donahue Study Center report?
Well, the Donahue Institute has done a series of these studies in recent years. And they've gotten funding from defense contractors, but also from the state of Massachusetts, for example, looking at what the economic impact is of defense dollars in Massachusetts and in the wider region. And they have recently come up with some new numbers that are cited by some of those in Washington who want to roll back these defense cuts. They say, look, here's an example of all the jobs that might be lost if we go about making these cuts. And so, you know, their point of view was just to go out and look at how much defense dollars come to the region and how many jobs do those account for. And mm-hmm. that's been used as a talking point, if you will, for some of those who want to avoid these cuts.
Okay. And then the other study that is also being used as talking points comes from the Political Economy Research Institute, also at UMass. That was funded in part by Ben Cohen, one of the founders of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream. The major finding from that study...
Well, it's very interesting. The Perry Institute approached this very differently. Their study looked at, well, what if you spent a similar amount of money instead of on defense, on education, green energy, and healthcare? How many jobs would that amount to? And what they found is that in most cases, the same $1 billion, for example, you spend on defense would create far more jobs, between 50%, I think, and 140% greater number of jobs, including a greater number of high-paying jobs. Mm-hmm. So both of these institutes looked at this from a very different lens. And I think it's an example of how interest groups, whether it's the defense contractors on one side or Ben Cohen on the other, use a place like UMass to try and sort of beef up their own arguments for what they think national policy should be. And this has really created kind of a philosophical debate Nobody refutes the numbers of the Donahue Institute and how many jobs are tied to defense. But there are people who are critical of this other study who say, well, you know, we need to spend money on defense, so we don't have any choice. But I think, again, it's a philosophical debate on if we've already spent what we need on defense, should we be spending more simply because it creates jobs? Maybe there are better ways to do that.
Brian Bender is national security reporter for the Boston Globe. He's based in Washington. You can find a link to his piece about these two UMass studies at our website, radioboston.org. Brian, great to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we're going to spend a little time now with the authors of those two studies. And listeners, we want to ask you to join the conversation. What's your view on this growing debate in Washington and around the country about what and how much defense spending to cut? Are you worried about how that will affect the local economy back home? And if you're worried about jobs, are there better ways to create jobs than DOD spending? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And joining us now is Martin Romiti. He's Director of Economic and Public Policy Research at the University of Massachusetts Donahue Institute. And Martin Romiti, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon.
Also with us is Robert Pollan. He's co-director of the Political Economy Research Institute at UMass Amherst and professor of economics. And Robert Pollan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Good to have you there. So, gentlemen, one campus, two reports, two very different conclusions, or as Brian Bender said, sort of looking at the problem through two very different lenses, helping to fuel a big debate about defense spending and the consequences of cutting defense spending. And Martin Romiti, if I could, with the Donahue Institute, let me start with you and your report. And if we could, let's try to keep this focused for the sake of our listeners on how all this could affect Massachusetts. First, give us a sense of just how dependent a state like Massachusetts is on defense spending in terms of numbers of jobs, DOD contracts, however, whatever metric you want to use.
Well, the metric we used was what we had in our study, and the study was really a look at all of the contracting awards that were coming from the Department of Defense out of D.C. into the state of Massachusetts, and this kind of aggregation and kind of detailed look at it hadn't been performed before. And so just bringing this information together really shed a lot of understanding and insight into what defense spending meant for supporting jobs in the Massachusetts economy. And what we ended up finding out is that the sheer volume or magnitude of the dollar contracting, well over $15 billion, put Massachusetts fifth in terms of the amount of money coming from D.C. into the state's economy, into our private businesses. And then it was not only just the amount, and we estimated that supported well over 100,000 jobs in the state, but it was also what that money was being put towards. And what we found was that Massachusetts in particular, and playing into the larger U.S. national security and defense systems, was really providing a niche in the more advanced technology, manufacturing, research and development, and products within the larger scale. And so this kind of niche in this innovation-driven, high-technology-driven manufacturing, along with the sheer size, is kind of the conclusions that our study reached, and then the importance that it had for jobs.
And we'll talk about that as this segment goes forward. I want to get Robert Pollan into this conversation. Your report suggests that there are much better ways to generate jobs than military spending. You say $1 billion spent on clean energy, healthcare, education could create a lot more jobs than $1 billion spent on the military. Can you explain a little more in detail about that?
Yeah, it's very straightforward. What we did was look at the data, the U.S. government data that is generated by the government doing surveys of businesses throughout the country, including Massachusetts. They organized the surveys into statistical tables called input-output tables. So the inputs in the tables are all the things that go into producing goods and services. The outputs are goods and services. So this is a very detailed, reliable statistical tool. So what we just did was use those data to figure out if you spend a given amount of money, say $1 billion, on defense, how many jobs will you get? and then compare the result from defense with other areas of spending, the ones you mentioned, including healthcare, education, and the green economy. And the basic result we got was that you get, for $1 billion of spending, a total of about 11,000 jobs in defense, whereas with the green economy, you'll get about 17,000 jobs. With healthcare, you'll get about 19,000 jobs. And with education, you'll get about 27,000 jobs. So that between education, healthcare, and the green economy, for every given amount of spending, you'll get between 50 and 140% more jobs than you will by spending on the military.
Doesn't your report, though, suggest as well that defense contract jobs are the highest paying jobs? So if we sort of diverted that spending away from defense toward those sectors that you outlined, would we be in fact be getting lower paying jobs?
Right. On average, the average level, let's just take wages. The average defense job pays about $60,000 per year, and the average for the others, all three of them, education, healthcare, and green economy, is about $50,000. So it is true you get, on average, 20% higher wages. But because you get so many more jobs, for example, you're getting 2.5 times more jobs by spending on education, you also get a substantially larger number of good jobs. Even though the percentage is lower, the total number of good jobs is significantly higher, and you also get a larger number of jobs at lower pay scales, and those jobs could also be converted into decent jobs over time.
Mm. And Martin Remedy, let me come back to you. We've been talking about the federal government looking for another $500 billion in across-the-board defense cuts, a total of $1 trillion. If that comes about, what would that mean nationally, regionally, or to the state of Massachusetts in terms of jobs lost?
Well, I always like to preface speculation like that on. It's easier to draw a crooked line than a straight one, but we did look into that question, and if you basically look at the job growth and the growth in the defense sector throughout Massachusetts, and then you apply the types of cuts that we're talking about with the triggering mechanism starting in 2013. We basically estimated, and we did this both defense and non-defense. I mean, the one thing I think to set up is it wasn't defense exclusive. You know, this whole triggering mechanism for the Federal Budget Act is set up to be painful for both defense and non-defense spending. And so we looked at it that way, and what we discovered is, you know, upwards of 50,000 jobs in the state could be in jeopardy with this triggering mechanism and the spending cuts going into effect. And a good share of these, 20,000 plus, could go through our defense industry-related sectors. The magnitude, 50,000 jobs, there's over 3 million jobs in the state of Massachusetts, and so 50,000, is that significant? Well, think about this. We've been struggling to have an economic recovery. We added about 40,000 jobs over the course of the last year and a half. All of that recovery and progress could be wiped away with these cuts. So I think it's dangerous to both the defense and the non-defense sector, what's looming on the horizon.
Well, let me see if I can get sort of you two to kind of talk a little bit about, I mean, in a way you're talking about slightly different things. And Martin Remedy, let me sort of put it to you this way. You know, looking through these two reports, it seems like Robert Pollan is saying that the Donahue Institute isn't wrong. That is, of course, spending lots of money on the military creates jobs. But the idea is that you're not asking the next question. If we're talking about jobs and jobs creation, aren't there better ways to do that than defense spending? And there's Robert Pollan suggesting green economy, healthcare, that kind of thing.
It's an interesting kind of take on the question, and not necessarily the question that we set out to answer directly. I think what we're looking at is that, you know, the need for national defense in the historic place of the U.S. in the global environment, and of course, having over 10 years with different war fronts going on, has necessitated, and we continue to need, a strong national defense. That's a little bit different question than, is defense a good job generator? I think what we were talking about is this that practicality of needing national defense creates jobs and necessitates jobs in that Massachusetts. In particular, how does it fit in to the strategy, the overall Department of Defense strategy? I think that it's hard to just say just put more into defense is the best job mechanism, but also I'm hesitant to say that's what we were trying to set out to prove. I think there will be an impact undoubtedly with defense cuts looming.
Sure. And Robert Pollan, let me come back to you. Let's accept that green jobs, healthcare, that education all do generate more jobs than defense spending. Even if they do, that isn't really what's being debated in Washington. I mean, the choice isn't do we spend $1 billion on defense versus $1 billion on green tech. The debate is, what do we do about this Budget Control Act of 2011, which mandates more than $1 trillion in Pentagon spending? So are you arguing really for a change in changing the terms of the debate in Washington, I guess?
I most definitely am, though not necessarily in the study that you've been citing, the nice enough to cite. That study is focused very narrowly on the question relative job creation capacity for spending on military versus these other areas, and the quality of jobs. And the result is, as we've discussed, that these other areas, green economy, education, and healthcare, are better sources of job creation. Now, to the broader question, I am strongly opposed to the idea of making large austerity-type cuts in the federal budget now. I think the economy has not recovered from the 2008-2009 recession, obviously. The jobs report of last week was weak. And so thinking about overall major cuts in government spending is the wrong way to go. And I've argued in other contexts on ways to continue federal spending and also to mobilize the $1.5 trillion that the U.S. commercial banks are sitting on and hoarding and needs to be put into the economy.
Listeners, we're talking about defense spending and the possibility of big defense cutting, big defense cuts. What's your view on this, and what's your view in particular on whether dollars spent on defense versus the green economy are better? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. With us is Martin Romiti. He's director of economic and public policy research at the University of Massachusetts Donahue Institute. Also, Robert Pollan, professor of economics and co-director of the Political Economy Research Institute at UMass Amherst. Let's go to Richard from Sterling, Mass. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I just thought I had read many recent reports out of the Defense Department talking about how environmental concerns internationally were probably what they would be targeting in years to come, fights over water and such. I was just wondering why they, the two planners don't just get together and under the same rubric of defense spending, just plan for environmental spending under that heading and use the defense physical plant we have for our defense contracting in this state to just start working on these environmental plans and thus avoid the political fights, because typically defense spending doesn't occasion a lot of back and forth if the right and the left can agree on spending for national defense and just fly it under the radar that way. I hope to.
All right, Richard, let me put that. Richard, Robert Pollan, let me come to you first, Richard's suggestion. What do you make of that?
I think it's a great idea, Richard. In fact, I have argued more or less the same thing. I mean, if we think about the notion of national security as broader than just being capacity to engage in war, but if we think about security over the long term in terms of climate security, in terms of avoiding what most climate scientists regard as the potential for ecological catastrophe over a generation, then we should be pouring, as we do into capacity to fight wars, we should be pouring tens of billions into advancing the green economy over the next generation. I don't really see it as there being any alternative, unless we want to play Russian roulette with our environment. So I think the federal government should be ramping up dramatically support for building a green economy. If we were to do it within the defense budget or the Department of Energy budget, where I happen to have been a consultant on this issue, actually. That's a secondary matter. The key thing is that that should be, as Richard said, part of what we broadly construe as national security.
Martin Romiti, let me bring you into that question. What do you make of that? Can that the sort of ideas be combined and redefined as a way to sort of split the difference here?
Well, Richard, I think, makes an excellent point, and I think sometimes when we talk about the military, we think quickly about troops on the ground and guns and other types of weapons. But, you know, the military has traditionally been a real leader in advancing new technology adoption. Now, saying that, I mean, the reason for doing it, the purpose for doing it may be different, but ultimately the whole economy and benefits in the case. So, for instance, I can think right offhand of a company well known here in Massachusetts, like iRobot. You know, you've got robotics, and the Defense Department contracts feeds that research and development. And you know, when we had these roadside bombing issues, this robotic and the iRobot was able to fill a specific purpose. Well, you know, after the Japanese tsunami and earthquake, the application of the iRobot was to go into these radioactive areas, and now they're looking at a new line of business into commercial nuclear diversifying. And so you can go through example after example, and it would be easy to see, and you know, the purpose, for example, of the green technology being supported already by the Department of Defense is, you know, on the battlefield to reduce reliance on oil, to make better and more efficient use of solar to power. But in doing that, we also have potentially the benefit to move that technology forward and use it more broadly. So, Rob, I see that as an excellent compromise.
Robert Pond, we literally have 10 or 15 seconds left here. I know it's a broad and deep subject that we've only managed to just scratch the surface of here, but we started this segment talking about how your two reports are fueling this debate in Washington. How do you think that debate is going in Washington? Is it at least focused on the right issues in your view?
Well, it's hard for me to know, sitting up here in Amherst, Massachusetts. I know I've been skewered as an out-of-touch academic by some lobbyists down in Washington. I hope that the focus stays on, you know, research. I think the Donahue Institute has produced credible research. I think we have. And it would be nice to know that the debate is focused around thoughtful kinds of studies like these.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you both for your thoughtful studies. That was Robert Pollan. He's professor of economics and co-director of the Political Economy Research Institute at UMass Amherst. Robert Pollan, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
And Martin Romiti, director of economic and public policy research at the University of Massachusetts Donahue Institute. Martin Romiti, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
Stay with us up next, a unique program that teaches kids with developmental disabilities to fight back against potential abusers. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.